reflection, wonder why you haven't now. Stand in the place where you were, now face west. Think about the place where you live, wonder why you haven't.
Adam Resnick is an Emmy-winning writer who got a start at Late Night with David Letterman and who has written for Saturday Night Live as well as HBO's The Larry Sanders Show. As well as co-creating the cult classic sitcom Get a Life, Resnick was born with a distaste for social situations and has since endured enough uncomfortable, disheartening, and straight-up disturbing experiences to put him off other human beings entirely. He presents 15 tragically funny autobiographical essays in his debut book, Will Not Attend: Lively Stories of Detachment and Isolation. It is published by Blue Rider Press, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Adam Resnick to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me on, Joe. I'm happy to be here.
It's a delight. We've wanted you on the show for a long time. We had a Get a Life show once, and okay. I wanted you on at that time, and it's great to have you on the program. So tell us about at what point you realized that you were not the life of the party.
Well, by the way, thanks for that introduction. I hope that doesn't frighten people off. That describes me somewhat, but I guess maybe I'm not. I hope I'm not quite that horrible. I don't hate everyone, but as far as not being the life of the party, I don't know. I think that was just chemically built into me when I was born. I just didn't enjoy interacting with other kids, boys especially for some reason. I mean, I had friends, but it was. I think things really changed when I was forced to go to school, which was like a nursery school or kindergarten. That was the first time that I think I realized that this socially interacting with kids was a requirement. It wasn't something that I had any control over, and I sort of, I can remember walking into, I believe it was kindergarten the first day, my mom taking me and just seeing all these idiot boys playing with trucks and planes and G.I. Joes, and I was, mortified. I was like, I don't feel like I want to be a part of this. I did always like girls more, because I always liked, I thought girls and women in general were just seemed kinder and smarter, and, you can talk to them, where boys were, just idiots by and large. I liked being by myself. I noticed that at a young age and continued, onto my later years. And I don't know why it is, but I just feel I don't like going out to restaurants with people. I don't like interacting that much. I just like being by myself. I don't know what else to say.
You write in the book that as far as girls, you ultimately found your first love around the age of 8 years old.
That's right, yeah.
Which is very young, if you think about it.
Yeah, that didn't turn out too well, but yes, that's correct.
An Easter egg hunt went awry.
Yep, to put it mildly, that's exactly right, yeah. It was an Easter egg hunt that to this day still haunts me.
the first story in the book. Don't you think, having worked with many comedians, that being your job is to write and to write funny, that seems to be a similar MO amongst comedians to have that antisocial tendency?
I really don't know, because I don't, I have a lot of writer friends, comedy writer friends. I don't really hang out with comedians that much, but it's sort of the way I just write in the way I think. I always think that my dad is probably the funniest guy I know, but he's never said anything to get a laugh. He's just a funny character, For him, the idea of telling a joke, he would find that very silly, why would you do that? But he's a funny character. I think I inherited his, from both being around him or whatever, this sort of sarcasm or a certain negativity, and it lends. And since he's a funny guy, I mean, I guess the way that I saw things or would speak of things, they just came out kind of funny, but not intentionally. I was never actually this big comedy geek or listen to comedians or anything like that. It's just natural for me. And the way I told the stories in the book, that was the tone that felt best, and it just felt right. It's not like I was a guy obsessed with thinking, I need another joke here, I need a better joke there. It just, that's the way I write, that's the way I think. I wanted it to be funny, and I think that was the best way to tell these stories. I didn't want it to be overly dramatic, but I also wanted it to have some, to not be, there had to be moments that were real and somewhat, made a larger point. I didn't set out to write like a goofball memoir. I wanted it to be truthful, but it's just fun. The things that happened to me were kind of funny, and the way I look at them or the way my parents react and all that, it is just naturally funny. So I don't think I answered your question. In fact, I barely remember what your question
was.
Well,
that's okay, because I'm now going to ask you just a slight nuance of that question, which is the original question was about, in writing for comedians, do you find that there's a similar trait there? But you look at somebody, you wrote for Late Night with David Letterman, you wrote for Letterman. Letterman has a lovely blurb about the book for you. And it seems that there is a guy who has spent much of his life trying to avoid interaction with people, at least in his social life, and as I was reading this, it seems like, oh, okay, well, that you make the perfect choice for someone to write for him.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting, because when I first saw Dave on television in the early 80s, I hadn't really seen him before. He had that morning show on NBC, which I had never seen. I didn't know much about the guy, but when that show came on, when Late Night started, it wasn't just the humor of the show, which had a very specific sort of slant, kind of a cynical tone. But Dave himself, I connected with him. I saw someone who I felt kind of thought the way I did. You know, I'm not, don't have his talent. I'm not funny. I'm not a performer, you know, or anything like that. But there was a certain worldview, though, his take on things that I immediately related with. And I think that did, you know, it made me a good candidate to eventually write on the show. But it's, but yeah, Dave is very much, you know, he is an honest guy. So the way he would conduct interviews, especially in the early days before people were really got to know who he was, it would just came off like, oh, he's sort of like a mean guy. But no, he's just sort of an honest guy. He didn't have a lot of patience for, you know, actors coming on, just plugging whatever they were, you know, their movie or whatever, and not really, you know, giving much, or just that they were maybe acting a little silly or doing something that, you know, needed to be pointed out. But he never was out to get anyone. He just was, he was the first of the guys that sort of didn't kiss the guests, I guess, you know, and I, there's a whole larger thing to that, but I just think that Dave was the real deal. He is the real deal. And I connected to that.
Randy Cohen has been on the show many times and talked about his participation in the show and how you leave that experience and you say, okay, well, I'm responsible for the monkey cam or something. Did you come out of that of what you did on that show, of one particular thing that you were proud of?
I was sort of like an all-purpose kind of writer there. I wrote a lot of stuff with Chris Elliott for his pieces and I was kind of a catch-all. There's a lot of things. I mean, I can't think of any one thing that comes to mind. I can't remember. I don't think I did anything as iconic as the monkey cam. I didn't think of things that way. There's all different types of writers on the staff, and I didn't think so much that way. I like to write remote pieces for Dave or any kind of thing that was scripted for Dave. I like to do that. And I also enjoyed quite a bit writing some of his monologue jokes, which were kind of unique compared to the other writers that wrote the monologue jokes were fantastic, and they would churn out, you know, great topical political humor. And my stuff was always just about Dave talking about his weekend and doing something silly. I enjoyed doing that, and I wish I could point to one specific thing. I'm kind of a blank.
So, like, the day that Dave did a show from home waiting for the cable guy, was that you?
No, that was early on.
I think it was early.
I started as an intern there. That was probably the first year of the show. Yeah, that was classic. I was just a mere fan at that point. And, you know, when I got there, I was an intern, and then I eventually became a writer. I don't know who. That was sounds like Meryl Marco to me. She was the one with Dave that sort of created, you know, the show. That sounds like her. And that's a really good piece to point out as something that, you know, most people certainly, I mean, I would be one of them as well, who have never seen anything quite like that, you know, on television, on a, you know, late night show or anything like that. So it was, just great groundbreaking material.
How did you begin your working relationship with Chris Elliott and have that work in the sense of having a character who could be a little annoying, a little off-putting, and yet still endearing?
Well, you know, I was a huge fan of Chris's before I even met him, so I didn't know what to expect. I kind of thought maybe he would be just a jerk. I really, you know, because of the way he was on the show, I thought that was his maybe character. I thought it was hilarious, but you know, it turns out that he's actually a great actor and is nothing like those sort of you know, the character he would portray on the show that was always like, you know, the arrogant idiot, as I call it. I think Chris created the modern day arrogant idiot that is a lot of people draw from, a lot of comedic actors draw from today. But it was, you know, working with Chris, we became friends very quickly. We bonded over a lot of things after I got there, and then found ourselves writing pieces together, you know, like the Marlon Brando pieces and Morton Downey and things like that.
So, Marlon, tonight, what you always have something, what can we do?
Hey, Dave.
Yeah?
Before we start, oh,
sure.
My God, can you do something for me?
I'd be happy to.
Oh, geez. I'm afraid to look. Can you peer over here? Am I wearing pants?
Yes, you are, Marlon.
Oh, geez, thank God. Thank God. Yesterday, I go out of my hotel room. I get halfway down Fifth Avenue. I got no pants on.
Oh, no.
How embarrassing.
Yeah, I guess.
Luckily, it didn't happen here on the Superstation.
That's right. Now, Marlon.
It was always, writing with Chris was always fun. It was just fun and easy. And when the two of us were together, it was just, I don't know, we clicked. We could write those pieces, you know, pretty fast. Chris is a great guy. What he did on that show, you know, it took a lot of courage because his character when he went out with Dave was the guy who sort of looked down on Dave, which is hilarious. So, I mean, the audience is always going to be with Dave. So for Chris to take that position, you know, that comedic position was pretty courageous. And I thought that Dave and Chris were just great together. So hilarious in the pieces they did.
Adam Resnick is our guest. His new book is Will Not Attend, Lively Stories of Detachment and Isolation, published by Blue Rider Press.
I realize that you are most likely the product of lower-class inbreeding, but perhaps you could help me.
Oh, gosh, I certainly hope so.
I have been wandering this dreary village in hopes of finding the Queen Catherine. You wouldn't have any idea where she might be docked, would you?
You know what you are? You're one of those little, fancy lads, aren't you? Boy, you're cute.
Okay.
Gosh, what a sweet little outfit. Is it your little spring outfit?
No.
You couldn't be cuter. You're so adorable. Oh, my. You know, you remind me of my niece Sally. Lovely girl. She's a dietitian. Hey, would you like to buy a monkey?
And do you look back with fondness on Get a Life, the Fox series, which lasted, what, two seasons, three? Something like that?
Close, actually, more like one and a half.
Okay, there you go.
And we were lucky to get that half, by the way. But I'm happy with a lot of the things that we did on that show. Working there, I remember Chris and I, it wasn't a great experience. And we had just come from, look, Dave was the greatest job I ever had. I mean, working for Dave Letterman, there was nothing better, especially in those days at, you know, in Rockefeller Center. So we didn't know much. Dave kept us protected from Hollywood and all that kind of, we just didn't know about it. I never thought about doing anything else, but that sort of dropped into my lap, Get a Life. And we went out there and we just immediately to go from working at 30 Rock to just like some, this awful little lot that was off of Sunset. It was Sunset Gower. And I don't think we liked the experience where we came from. And we just didn't feel, we felt out of our element because it was a whole little clubhouse at Letterman, you know, Chris and I, neither of us were very savvy into the ways of Hollywood. And, you know, it was tough going for a while, you know, like some people we worked with, it was rough. But so not a lot of great memories working on Get a Life. But in retrospect, it's nice to know that there seems to be some smallish cult that likes the show. At the time we were doing it, I can say there was no sense of that. You know, I think we only got a sense of that maybe starting like a year or two after the show went off the air.
And in the end, you look back on it, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I would think you say, oh, my God, I was writing for one of the great comedy icons, Bob Elliott, Chris's
right.
father of the great Bob and Ray fame.
Right.
Of, oh, my God, that's a cool thing.
Yeah, absolutely. It was incredible, in fact. I mean, you know, that was, you know, that's just the sort of thing you never expect would happen. And he's so funny. He was so great on that show. And, he's one of the greats, Bob Elliott. So that was very gratifying, and it was a privilege.
Jeez, we go through this same thing every year. And every year it gets worse.
Chris, it's like I've always promised you. When you're a little older, you can go with me. But for now, I just hate having to tone down my language.
Dad, come on, I'm 30 years old. You know you don't have to mind your P's and Q's around me, you old son of a sea cookie. Come on, it's always been my dream to go with you.
It was always my dream to be born sterile. But life tends to stink like that.
So again, to make this connection of Letterman being kind of that standoffish guy, Larry Sanders, that whole show was basically that character, which you came to be the co-executive producer of and writer for the Larry Sanders Show with Gary Shandling. So it, again, fit very much your personality.
Yeah, well, that was another show. I thought I was a great fan of that show, and it was, but very different. Gary and Dave are very different people, and but it was no to the point of the just the neurosis, the narcissism, and things like that, and a little bit of the behind scenes stuff from the show. I could recognize a little bit, but it didn't really quite feel like what it did, what Letterman felt like when I was working at Late Night. You know, that was creatively a good match for me as well. I had been such a, you know, longtime fan of Larry Sanders by the time I got there. It was, I just knew the show inside and out, so it was fun to work on.
Okay, in certain key cities, you're losing to Keenan. Listen, the bottom line is we've got to do a little fine-tuning to get the numbers up.
Our research department has come up with some really creative ideas. These are just a few suggestions. Mm-hmm. Number one. We'd like to see a more enthusiastic Leno-type opening where you run through the audience and shake everyone's hand.
You know, that's how you get the flu.
You could wear rubber gloves.
That's true. And then I could check their prostates, too.
We'd get more VR's audience.
Funny. That's funny stuff.
But definitely not a similar, like, he and Dave couldn't be further apart, really, in so many ways. I guess I was drawn to that for reasons, a different type of cynicism, a little different than what it was like on Letterman, because Gary's character was like a very self-absorbed kind of guy who was into the show business thing, where Dave was not like that. He was not into the show business thing. You know, he did his show. Dave was a broadcaster, a born broadcaster, and he did this brilliant show that you know, started this comedy revolution. But he didn't think about Hollywood. He never thought about doing more. You know, I think all Dave ever thought about was the Tonight Show, which he got screwed out of. But whereas Gary, I think, is very much an L.A. sort of guy, and it's they're two different people.
How about the character of Larry Sanders and Gary Shandling? Were there similarities there?
Yeah, I mean, I always thought that Larry Sanders was sort of a sanitized version of Gary.
Kind of cleaned up for television.
Yeah,
sure.
Cleaned up. Yeah, that was the sugar-coated version of Gary. But you know, the Larry Sanders character was a very real person. That's the, you know, and that's how Gary played it. I think he did bring a lot of himself to that character, and some of it wasn't pleasant. And that's what was cool, you know, about that show and who Larry Sanders was. But still, he was playing a character. Whereas more when you see Dave, I don't know if this even connects bringing Dave up, but you know, the thing I love about Dave is when Dave does a show, you're pretty much seeing Dave. You know, that's who he is. He doesn't. If you see that he seems to be in a cranky mood because something's not going well, that's him. It's aware, and he's also just the greatest, nicest, most generous guy, you know, that I know.
He's retiring after so long on the air, both Late Night and The Late Show. And it just seems, and I felt this way with Carson, and I still do, that when something big happens in the news, that I miss Carson. And I just, and he was a little bit before my time, where I grew up with Letterman, and I can't imagine TV without him.
I know. It's very, when I heard the news, whenever that was, a month ago, I don't know when it was, even though I don't work there anymore, it was depressing because I still feel, you know, like I'm connected to that show and connected to Dave. And the thought of him not being on there, on the air, is just sad and disturbing for me personally. Carson was also not, I mean, my parents watched Carson,
right.
But they, you know, and I appreciated him as just you know, he was good at his job, and he's a guy. It was always like kind of a nice feeling to know Johnny was there. But Dave was my guy. Dave was, from the first time I saw him before I worked there, that was, he was my Carson. And yeah, it's rough. It's really rough. And the world has just changed so much. It's so splintered. There's so many of these late night hosts. It's like it's just a different world. You know, it isn't like you just turn on. Even when we did late night at 12:30 at NBC, you know, that was, you know, really the only thing going at 12:30. And Johnny was the only thing going at 11:30. It was just seemed like a smaller, cozier world back then. It wasn't that long ago.
Obviously, the book is very funny. It's an awful lot of fun to read the stories in the book. But there is also that you'll squirm a little bit in reading, and that's okay. You want that, I assume.
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's part of the honesty of it. And you squirm, but if you read it, you know, if you can, a lot of the stories, though, like, I think I fall on my sword plenty. Like, you know, I shine the light on myself of saying, like, well, look, you know, I'm messed up. I'm kind of crazy, and I'm just trying to figure out sometimes why I'm crazy, and a lot of times I don't understand. You know, it's all that nature versus nurture. It's, in my case, I think it's both. But it was, you know, it felt good to write it, though. It felt good because I'd never written about myself before. And, yeah, so there are a lot of squirmy things about me, I guess, and, yeah, they're in the book.
So what are you at work on now? What's next?
Right next, I'm still trying to figure out that there's a pilot that I think I'm going to write, and also there's a feature I've been thinking about. So that's probably the next thing up right now. Just very, like, very busy with the book, and that's my main focal point. So yeah, and I want to write another book. That's a possibility too. So I'll see.
Well, this one is endlessly entertaining. It is Will Not Attend, Lively Stories of Detachment and Isolation. It is published by Blue Rider Press. Adam Resnick, a great pleasure to have you on the program. I thank you very much for spending time with us. Best of luck with this project.
Great. Thanks so much, Joe. It's a pleasure to be on.
Thank you. Again, the title of the book, Will Not Attend. Adam Resnick is the author. Lively Stories of Detachment and Isolation. It's published by Blue Rider Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.